Good morning. I want to welcome each of you to our Sunday morning service. I don't feel like I quite have enough gray hair to be talking about this morning, but we're going to do our best and we're going to see where it goes. Did you know there are around 70 million fathers in the United States? According to the U.S. Census Bureau, 18.4 million children, which is one in four, live without a biological father, a stepfather, or adoptive father in the home. That is enough children to fill New York City twice or Los Angeles four times over. Research shows that when a child is raised in a father-absent home, they are affected in the following ways. They face four times greater risk of poverty. They're more likely to have behavioral issue problems, two times greater risk of infant mortality, more likely to go to prison, more likely to commit crime, seven times more likely to become pregnant as a teen, more likely to face abuse and neglect, more likely to abuse drugs and alcohol, two times more likely to suffer obesity, and two times more likely to drop out of school. In the state of South Carolina, only 61% of the children are living with two parents. Now, that's all from the U.S. Census Bureau, so it's definitely not from a Christian perspective, but that is the world we live in today. I don't know how to preach this other than to use examples of what was modeled to me over the years of my life. So I will expose myself a little bit, and I'll expose my father, my father-in-law, and another man that was kind of my adopted father. Fathers are pillars in the development of a child's emotional well-being. Children look to their fathers to lay down the rules and enforce them. They also look to their fathers to provide a feeling of security, both physical and emotional. We need to make it a point to thank our fathers. We need to honor them, make them feel special. Fathers, this is for you. I know there's a cultural war against you. All you hear about are the ones not doing their job, but the silent majority are still faithfully doing their job. This is a little quote by Paul Harvey. A father is a thing that is forced to endure childbirth without an anesthetic. A father never feels worthy of the worship in a child's eyes. He is never quite the hero his daughter thinks, never quite the man his son believes him to be, and this worries him sometimes. So he works too hard to try and smooth the rough places in the road for those who will follow him. Fathers are what give daughters away to other men who aren't nearly good enough so they can have grandchildren who are smarter than anybody's. Fathers make bets with insurance companies about who will live the longest. One day they lose and the bet's paid off to the part of them they leave behind. The quote I read might appear humorous to some. To others, it might feel negative or depressing. I see all the above in the quote. As I read this, I see a father who feels inadequate. In his mind, he knows and I quote, "He is not quite the hero his daughter thinks, or never quite the man his son believes him to be." Next we read, and I quote again, "He works too hard to try and smooth the rough places in the road for those of his own who will follow him. I now see a father overcompensating for his feeling of inadequacy. And you may ask me, what is wrong with working hard to make it easier for the next generation? Absolutely nothing. He didn't say he worked hard. He said he worked too hard." Next, we read that, and I quote again, that fathers are what give daughters away to other men who aren't nearly good enough. "I now see a father measuring every other man against his own inadequacies." If you have a daughter, you probably know what he's talking about, even though my daughter's only two. Fathers, the simple fact of the matter is this. We are inadequate on our own without God. It is also in our DNA to serve, to protect, and to provide. As fathers, we will always drive ourselves to better our family's lives. We cannot deal with our inadequacies without humility. Overcompensation continues to fuel our inadequacies. How, you may ask? Overcompensation is sweeping our inadequacies under the rug, creating a facade, an illusion. On the surface, our life is one thing. But if you were to dig past the facade that has been created, they would probably find a father dealing with pain, rejection, and the list goes on, you fill in the blanks. There's absolutely zero focus on God when we try to overcompensate to hide our inadequacies. Zero humility. When we do this, our focus is on ourselves, not on God. Now, I had a video I wanted to play, and then I found out that we don't have a projector. So, if you want to watch this later, it fits the next topic I'm talking about. Just Google Crazy Juggler on YouTube, and you can watch it, just not now. In conversation with a couple men one day at work, one man said that life is like juggling. As fathers, that's very true. As we juggle responsibilities that we are very good at, and we also juggle responsibilities that we have as fathers, but we aren't very good at. Imagine with me a young married man, life is just beginning. His responsibilities are still relatively low. He's what jugglers would call a novice. Life continues. Kids are added. Church responsibilities are added. He is now juggling so many things, he wonders how he will keep this pace up. The world record, by the way, in juggling is 11 balls, and I don't know how long that lasted. But this man that I'm speaking of, he has surpassed 11 of them. So as he's juggling, his inadequacies start to well up in him. He looks around at his peers, and with dismay, he thinks, or realizes or thinks, whatever you want to call it, that his peers appear to be juggling more than he is. They appear to be calmly going on about their life. They appear to be doing it all right. Their careers and family are the perfect model. This young man soon realizes that he's going to drop a ball very soon if something doesn't change. And he might even drop a couple in front of everybody. So quietly, he slips 5 balls out of the rotation. He makes sure the things he slipped out of the rotation were things he wasn't good at. His logic is this: I'll make a fool of myself if I keep doing them, trying to do them. Everyone will see how inadequate I am, and they'll think poorly of me. And then in further reasoning and logic, he says, my dad never taught me how to do them. It's his fault, not mine. I realize that there are things we're naturally bent at to be better, that we are naturally bent to be better at than others. That's not the point. As fathers, we don't get the luxury of saying, I'm not good at something, so I'm just not going to do it. As fathers, we have to do our best at all aspects of being a father, no matter how little we know, no matter how badly we blunder. That is where humility and forgiveness come in. The consensus that day in the conversation was this: you will drop something in your life. It's expected. Fathers, don't feel guilty about that. Humility is needed. We're not superheroes. Our problem is not in dropping something. Our problem is the continual dropping of the same thing. What does a godly father look like? How do we become one? I've had a few fathers in my life, and today there are 3 that I will use as examples. It's my father, my father-in-law, and another man. His name is Marlon. First and foremost, a godly father needs to know and love God. We, as godly fathers, need to fear the Lord. We need to have a relationship with God to truly seek Him. Matthew 6:33 says this: but seek first His kingdom and His righteousness, and all these things will be given to you as well. Fathers, are we seeking first and foremost God's kingdom? What are our priorities? Proverbs 14:26 reads this: whoever fears the Lord has a secure fortress, and for their children, it will be a refuge. There are 2 words that I want to look at in this verse. The first is a fortress, and you ask, what is a fortress? It is a person or thing not susceptible to outside influence or disturbance. Now we ask ourselves, what is a refuge? A refuge has 2 meanings: a condition of being safe or sheltered from pursuit, danger, or trouble, or something providing a shelter. Fathers, when you fear the Lord as a fortress, you are not susceptible to outside influence. Your focus is God. You are not deterred. Your children and your wife will find refuge and peace in your trust and relationship with God. What is your response as a father when things go wrong in your life? When you are disappointed? When life throws you a curveball? Is your attention drawn to God? What does your family see? Marlon was a man that had his eyes on God, and as a young man, I had the opportunity to watch his response to trials, and it helped and molded me into who I am today. He was a man that I worked for over the years and became very much like another father in my life. And in the space of approximately 1 year, I saw his shop burn. I saw him roll his truck, get put in the hospital, and I saw him get ran over by a tractor. Never once did I hear him complain. His smile and his response of "I'm so thankful it wasn't worse and God has a plan" always had a way of drawing our attention to what is important in life and to God. And in my eyes, he was a fortress. He was grounded in God. Fathers, what are you telling your children when you face trials? Godly fathers stand in the gap for their families. In the ancient world of the Bible, cities had walls surrounding them to provide protection from enemies. When the wall was breached, the city was vulnerable to destruction. The only way to secure it was for people to risk their lives by literally standing in the gap of the wall and fighting the enemy. Ezekiel 22:30 says, "I looked for someone among them who would build up the wall, stand before me in the gap on behalf of the land, so I would not have to destroy it, but I found no one." Why is it so hard to find fathers and men to stand in the gap? It is hard when you're standing in the gap to keep it from becoming personal. To keep from taking attacks personal, you need to have three things. Number one is a oneness with God. Number two, a kingdom focus instead of an inward focus. And number three, you need humility. Fathers, how do we stand in the gap if we're not grounded in our relationship with God? Our families need us to be fathers who fear God, so when the tough decisions need to be made, they are God-fearing decisions. Standing in the gap not only means to defend our families, but also to show tough love. My father modeled tough love to me many times in my life. I had two brothers who left home when they reached 15. My one brother left unannounced one night with a friend headed for Florida. The vehicle broke down a couple hours down the road, so he had no choice but to come back. I was 10 at the time. My memory is slightly foggy on all the exact time frames. He decided to leave a couple months later again, and I still remember that night. That night he left on his bicycle. My dad had to make a decision that was very unpopular with the rest of the family, but looking back was grounded in reason and in logic. My dad told him, "If you want to leave, that's fine. I'm not standing in your way, but I'm not going to help you leave. So your only way to leave is to get on a bike and bike." After that night, we heard nothing from him as a family for 3 to 4 weeks, so we had no idea what happened to him. Fathers, when you are faced with rejection, are you grounded spiritually? Are you standing in the gap, or metaphorically speaking, will you duck and let your family get hit by the arrows? Does your family find refuge in your relationship with God? A godly father loves and honors his wife. Ephesians 5:25, "Husbands, love your wives just as Christ loved the church and gave himself up for her." Fathers, please do not keep score. Is it really important who did what or who didn't do something? Remove your focus from yourself. Focus on your wife. Serve her and serve your family. Do it cheerfully. Set the example for your children. Your children are watching you. Listen to your wife's dreams and concerns. Do not speak negatively about your wife. Honor her. I have never heard my father ever say anything negative about my mom. Honor and love are not the same thing. The difference is that love means to have a strong affection for someone or something, or to be praised. Honor is to think highly. to respect highly, to show respect for, or to recognize the importance of spiritual value of. A godly father disciplines his children in love. Hebrews 12:9. Moreover, we have all had human fathers who disciplined us, and we respected them for it. How much more should we submit to the Father of spirits and live? They disciplined us for a little while, as they thought best, but God disciplines us for our good, in order that we may share in his holiness. Proverbs 13:24, whoever spares the rod hates their children, but the one who loves their children is careful to discipline them. Proverbs 3:11-12, my son, do not despise the Lord's discipline, do not resent his rebuke, because the Lord disciplines those he loves as a father the son he delights in. A godly father spiritually trains his children. Proverbs 22:6, start children off in the way they should go, and even when they are old, they will not turn from it. A godly father knows and understands his children's level, limitations, physically, emotionally, and spiritually. Both my dad and my father-in-law have modeled this for me. And when I lived in Iowa, I had a combine and I did custom harvesting. The specific season I'm thinking of, I had 1,300 acres that I was contracted to do that year. The typical season starts off in the second week in September and can go till around Thanksgiving. The weather after the second week in November can really be hit or miss. It can be very rainy, or it can possibly even snow. If you know anything about harvesting, well, in the middle of November, it's also cold, can be colder, and the sun is not in the sky as much, and it just doesn't dry your crops. Corn is not affected like soybeans, so it's very important that you're able to at least get the beans out by the second week of November. This particular year that I was dealing with was very wet and rainy early in the season, and crops weren't drying. I'd get about one day of harvest in, and then it would rain again. And around the start of the third week in October, I had only harvested about 150 acres. You can imagine where my stress level was by that time. I had slept as much as I could sleep. I didn't feel like sleeping anymore. I just wanted to get this load off my mind. The coming week, the forecast showed dry all week or mostly dry. And also in harvesting soybeans, about 7 o'clock at night, it just depends. If there's no breeze and it gets tough, you're done. If there's a breeze, you can sometimes go late. It's hit or miss again. The later it goes in the season, the harder it is to get those out. So the coming forecast was looking pretty decent. And that week, I said, by the time Saturday comes around, there's going to be a whole different, I'm going to do what I can do. So that week, my grain cart operator and I, we ran around the clock twice. We would just run the beans during the day. Then as soon as it got to be about dark or about where we couldn't go with beans anymore, we'd switch and we'd just run corn. My philosophy was that when it rained, then I'd sleep again. My dad at the time was in his early 60s. And he worked a full-time job, so not necessarily a young man. One afternoon that week, he called me up and he said, look, tonight, I'm going to come out and I'm going to run it for you, and you go home and sleep. Dad could have said this. He could have said, you've got yourself into this mess. You figure out how to get yourself out. But he didn't. All he said was, I'll help. And if you know anything about my dad, He is very uncomfortable running a machine he does not recognize in a field he does not recognize in the middle of the night. So for him to make this, for him to do this was way out of his comfort zone, but very much appreciated. I also had a project with Mass Construction that rapidly deteriorated in every way imaginable between us and the homeowners. There was plenty of blame to pass around to all parties, but I'd be naive if I didn't bear some of the responsibility. I remember one particular night after receiving another not so nice email about me not getting them something, and I have no idea what it was anymore and don't care to remember. Dale asked me, he said, "What's it going to take to get it done?" I told him that I think I could probably have it done by 3 in the morning if I got started working on it right then. This was about 10:30 at night. He said, "Do it." But then tomorrow, he said, "Shut your phone off, take your family away for the day, and I will run interference for you." This specific job had me feeling very blue by the time it was completed, although I always felt satisfaction that we completed it and didn't quit. I seriously questioned if I had what it takes to be a contractor after this miserable fail. Dale had a choice in his response to this situation. He is my boss, he is my father-in-law, and he is my pastor. Each title he had warranted a different response to this situation, and I believe he chose the father response, although he's not here to defend himself. His only response was something like this: "The most valuable lessons are the most painful. I bet you will never forget this lesson as long as you live, and it will make you a better businessman. Fathers, be careful in your response to the lessons your children are going through. If you react too soon and fix the situation, they won't be able to experience the lesson and learn from it. If you react too late, your children may be crushed so badly there's little chance of them recovering. I believe your relationship, and I'm calling your relationship the fortress that we talked about earlier, the relationship, your relationship, which is your fortress with God, is what is needed for you to know when to stand in the gap for your family. A godly father is approachable. To be approachable, you need humility." Luke 15, 11 to 24. If you want to follow along, you can. Jesus continued, "There was a man who had two sons. The younger one said to his father, 'Father, give me a share of the estate.' So he divided his property between them. Not long after that, the younger son got together all he had, set off for a distant country, and there squandered his wealth in wild living. After he had spent everything, there was a severe famine in that whole country, and he began to be in need. So he went, hired himself out to a citizen of the country, who sent him to the field to feed pigs. He longed to fill his stomach with the pods that the pigs were eating, but no one gave him anything. When he came to his senses, he said, 'How many of my father's hired servants have food to spare? And here I am, starving to death. I will set out, go back to my father and say to him, Father, I have sinned against heaven and against you. I'm no longer worthy to be called your son. Make me like one of your hired servants.' So he got up and went to his father. But while he was still a long way off, his father saw him, was filled with compassion for him. He ran to his son, threw his arms around him and kissed him. The son said to him, 'Father, I have sinned against heaven and against you. I'm no longer worthy to be called your son.' But the father said to his servants, 'Quick, bring the best robe, put it on him, put a ring on his finger and sandals on his feet. Bring the fattened calf and kill it. Let's have a feast and celebrate. For this son of mine was dead and is alive again. He was lost and is found. So they began to celebrate. Can you imagine with me what was said about that family by their acquaintances? Can you imagine with me the scrutiny that father endured? The gossip. In the end, it didn't matter to the father. His son had come home, and the wrong had been made right. My dad also demonstrated and showed our family the same humility and forgiveness, just like the father did in the above passage. In closing, I would like to read, this is called An Old Soldier's Prayer by General Douglas MacArthur. He's talking about a son in here. You can put children in there. It says, "Build me a son, O Lord, who will be strong enough to know when he is weak and brave enough to face himself when he is afraid. One who will be proud and unbending in honest defeat and humble and gentle in victory. Build me a son whose wishes will not take the place of deeds, a son who will know thee, and that to know himself is the foundation stone of knowledge. Build me a son whose heart will be clear, whose goal will be high, a son who will master himself before he seeks to master other men, who will reach into the future, yet never forget the past. And after all these things are his, add, I pray, enough of a sense of humor so that he may always be serious, yet never take himself too seriously. Give him humility so that he may always remember the simplicity of true greatness, the open mind of true wisdom, and the meekness of true strength." Do we have a song? Let's stand. Let's pray. Dear God, we come before you again. We just thank you for your many blessings. We thank you for each one of the fathers that are here. And I just pray that you would bless them this day and just help them as they strive to serve their families. May you lead and direct us. We ask this all in your name. Amen.